Hey guys, just want to let you know the Patreon is up. Check it out, patreon.com/Beer City Media Podcast for all your extra Beer City Media needs. Now on with the show.
Can I open it on Jim Morrison?
You can.
Of course, lead singer of The Doors, the Lizard King himself. Born 1943, he is currently 72 years old.
Right, because he's not dead.
And is alive. Mm-hmm. But he supposedly died July 3rd, 1971 at the age of 27. Supposedly had heart failure and died in the bathtub of his Paris apartment.
These celebrities in their bathrooms.
But here's the skinny man. No autopsy was performed.
Ooh.
No police report was filed.
What?
He was put on ice for 3 days and taken to the coroner. Only two people ever saw the body. His girlfriend and a shady doctor named Dr. Max Vassil.
Vassil?
Dr. Maximum Vassil.
That sounds shady.
Yeah, it sounds like a Bond villain.
Sounds like something you get treated for.
Yeah, if Vassil is your man, get a second opinion. But Jim had a motive, okay? Get this. 2 years earlier, he freaked out on stage and whipped out his ding-a-ling. He did. I mean, I've heard about this.
Gonna die now.
And so he was out on bail after
was
being arrested.
Was it accidental or purposeful?
It was purposeful. He like...
What song was it?
He freaked out on stage.
Don't know.
Come on, baby, light my fire. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah. Then wick.
That's the one you know.
Welcome to the Conspiracy Therapy Podcast with Ryan, Larry, Springhill, Josh, and the Illumimami herself, Miss April. And on today's episode, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the Jim Morrison Deathspiracy. Say it's time for us to do an episode, but now I just want a margarita and a sombrero.
Is that the people who do that? Is that just like a whole album of like salsa covers?
That's a whole bunch of it's Senor Coconut and his orchestra, and it's
awesome.
They cover. They'll take an album and cover different genres of music.
That's amazing.
Like they did one. It was all Kraftwerk.
Oh, wow.
It's really good.
Oh,
that was my introduction to Senor Coconut.
I know that what I'm listening to later.
Yeah, right?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gathered in the Shoop Kitchen studio with the skeptic, the mom, and the beard, we're talking Jim Morrison Deathspiracy. Ooh. If I was a betting man and I didn't know all our episodes, I would think we'd already done this.
Right.
But I'm shocked. This isn't a Bunny Man repeat.
Yeah, right?
But realistically, I guess you jump right into it, pull the Thunderbird to the side of the road, and let's have a little truth corner action. Thoughts on The Doors? And everyone jump in.
I definitely had a phase where that was what I pretty much listened to for a couple months. Some low-hanging fruit there, Larry.
That's right.
I'm going to pick it.
Fair enough. Yep. Someone had to. Yeah, I was mesmerized by Jim's lyrics.
It's the story of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick that.
Yep.
Yeah. Pick at it.
Mm-hmm.
Pick, grab it.
Yeah.
Pull it. Twist it.
Thanks.
Bop it.
I would say for me, impartial. That was so not... My generation
is not
anything.
For you?
Yeah. Well, truly, like, that's not anything my parents listened to because it was kind of before their time, too.
Mm-hmm.
I watched like 10 minutes of the movie once.
Oh, the Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah.
Which we'll pick apart in this episode.
Ooh, wasn't that Val Kilmer?
Yeah. Yeah. Better days, Val Kilmer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Most days of Val Kilmer are better than current Val Kilmer.
Current Val Kilmer on stage in just leather pants.
Letters on the storm.
I'm glad we both went there together.
I get you, April. I can see that. So, Larry, what about you?
Not a fan.
Really?
It's like every song sounds the same.
They kind of do.
I think it's just, had he not died, I don't think right now anybody would be caring about the Doors.
All right.
The Doors is one of those bands that you can buy their t-shirt at like any
Hot Topic,
but like you see kids wearing it and you're like, you've never listened to the, like, come on.
All right. Before your Doors fan who went to listen to this episode and you're freaking out in your fucking car, I am a huge fan of the Doors.
Big Ol' Britches on Twitter.
No.
Yep. Send your head. Everybody, hate tweets.
This is why I love these people. We can all have different opinions. It's totally fine. I love this band. I fucking love this band. Like, if I had to pick between, then this is going to make other guys swerve off the road, but the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Doors, I'd go the Doors.
Really?
I honestly, it's three jazz musicians and a poet, and there's just a jam mentality to it, like a precursor to Pink Floyd, and actually, I would say Pink Floyd over the Doors, so, you know, don't shoot me there, but everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I like the way that things, I love the first album. Mm-hmm. I think it's immaculate, like front to back, great
stuff.
All the way to the end. Which I think when we did an episode one time, it was ranked as one of the most annoying songs which I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I can kind of understand that because I feel like, I don't know if it's like the music or the band or like Jim Morrison himself. It feels like pretentious.
Yes.
It's got a real pretentious, like,
I could see,
I'm a musician vibe. You know what I mean?
That is something that I struggled with when I did first get into the band, because I was like, come on, Jim, stop talking. You got a great voice. Like, he's got a real powerful baritone. Like, if you watch live performances, the guy can sing.
Yeah.
And he modeled a lot of his singing after Sinatra. He was a huge Elvis fan, too. In fact, if he was in the car and Elvis came on, he's like, shut the fuck up! And just, you know.
That should tell you.
Oh, watch out, man!
I'm not an Elvis fan, either.
Yeah.
Elvis is just, ugh.
I mean, I get that.
I could see, too, why you guys wouldn't care for the Doors. I mean, you have Ray Manzarek, who's a phenomenal keyboard player, but yeah, it does get a little over the top sometimes. You know, you look at songs like The End or
When the Music's Over.
There's a lot of keyboard solos and not so much guitar. Robbie Krieger didn't do a ton of guitar solos.
No, but he is pretty famous for his hand-picking style, which is cool. And I also love the fact that all the bass is key bass. So it's not like a stand-up bass like Josh would play or something.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, the recordings were.
Yeah. No. I mean, like, if you watch it live, it's all
right, the
keyboardist doing it, which I think is cool. And I love the sound of...
I'm a keyboard player, but it's like, come on.
Kind of boring. I get you. Dude, I completely get you.
I agree. I can see why people don't like the Doors. Mm-hmm. And it's either black and white with this band. Either you like them or you hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are people who vehemently either fall either way. So I get that. And if you're a person that hates them, fine. Cool. We're going to delve into this band and this history.
He's dead either way, so.
I think one thing we could all agree on is that the history of the 60s is pretty fucking fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado, we're going to get into the story of Jim Morrison. Born James Douglas Morrison on December 8th, 1943, 10 days before the Illumimami, in Melbourne, Florida, to Clara, Virginia, and Lieutenant J.G. George Stephen Morrison, a future Rear Admiral in the U.S. Ooh. Navy. Which is true. I think that's the lowest of the rears. Admirals.
Being called Rear anything just sort of makes you look like an asshole. So, fitting.
I mean,
nice to it.
I am the ass Admiral.
Yeah. His ancestors were Scottish, Irish, and English. Admiral Morrison commanded U.S. naval forces during the Gulf of Tonkin incident in August of 1964, which also, future episode, delving into Vietnam there. That was the, which that provided the pretext for the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War in 1965. Morrison had a younger sister, Anne Robin, and a younger brother. So he was the oldest of three. In 1947, this is interesting. This is a through line. You hear this story all the time with Jim Morrison. I think they even did kind of a play on it in Wayne's World 2. In 1947, when he was 3 to 4 years old, Morrison allegedly witnessed a car accident in the desert during which a truck overturned and some Native Americans were lying injured at the side of the road. He referred to this incident in the Doors' song Peace Frog on their 1970...
Ouch.
Yeah.
This will hurt for many
white moons. White family, please call paramedics. Smelly tree has fallen over. I'm sorry. So, he mentions it in the spoken word performances Dawn's Highway and Ghost Song on the posthumous 1978 album An American Prayer. Morrison believed this incident to be the most formative event of his life.
Wow.
And made repeated references to it in the imagery in his songs, poems, and interviews. He actually, his family, he thinks that a shaman jumped into his soul at that moment. And that's what led to the introspective.
That's where the pretentiousness comes from. Yep. He's pretty sure he's a shaman. I'm a god.
Yep.
His family, though, does not recall this traffic accident happening the way that he told it.
He was a child.
I was going to say, if he's a child, if he believes it and he drew upon
probably just
that.
Accidentally popped up over the curb.
Had a flat tire.
When I was 3 to 4 years old, I had a dream that Bert and Ernie came alive and tried killing me. Like, that doesn't make it real. Like,
that is one.
Don't do that, Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, exactly.
Snuffleupagus jumped into your soul.
Big Bird will smother me.
Yep.
I mean,
hey Bird.
If you were a Muppet, which Muppet would you be?
I'm Oscar. let's just get out of the way.
That's
like
fair.
You said it, not me.
No, okay. So are we talking Sesame Street or are we talking Muppet Show?
Because they're all Muppets.
If you're Sesame, you got it with Sesame Street. But if he's Muppet Show Muppets, he's totally the old guys in the balcony.
Yes, both.
Yeah, both of them as one.
Interchangeable.
In the same trash can with a turntable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Ryan's the Polish chef or whatever.
The Swedish chef.
Josh is Fozzie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Waka waka.
There's a lot of waka walking happening there.
I would say you're like
me in the balconies.
I'm kind of neurotic like Kermit.
You're like a Kermit with like who moonlights as like a goth Ernie.
Who was the
what?
I'm Kermit and the girl with the real big eyebrows and like the bangs, that Muppet that sang in the band.
Nice. Kind of reminds me of Janis Joplin, who we'll get to soon enough. So the family doesn't recall it that way. According to the Morrison biography, no one gets out of here alive. Morrison's family did drive past a car accident on an Indian reservation when he was a child, and he was very upset by it. The book The Doors, written by the surviving member of The Doors, explains how different Morrison's account of the incident was from that of his father. This book quotes his father saying, quote, "We went by several Indians. It did make an impression on him. He always thought about that crying Indian. This is contrasted sharply with Morrison's tale of Indians scattered all over the highway bleeding to death."
Jesus.
Now, maybe he's just remembering that commercial from the 80s when they were talking about picking up
pollution,
trash.
Yeah.
Or like he predicted it.
Tear that just rolled down his...
They did say that he predicted electronic dance music. He's in one of the interviews I saw online. He at one point says, "I think in the future, what you'll see is one man with a computer entertaining an audience."
Well, I mean, yeah, even a broken clock's right twice a day.
Wow. Even a broken door opens up once
I feel like every single time we get to a new part of this, you're going to just be like, pompous asshole.
That is...
It's tracking.
I think April's really taking the skeptic thing to the nth degree here.
She's fighting for that right now. In another book, his sister is quoted as saying, quote, he enjoyed telling that story and exaggerating it. He said that he saw a dead Indian by the side of the road, and I don't even know if that's true. But by all accounts, as we'll see in the future, he kind of disavowed and disowned his family. And a lot of that had to do with the parenting style and the way that he kind of himself wanted to break free of being a military brat. Getting out there and seeing the world. Although he had traveled by the time he was in high school, he'd lived at like 9 different countries.
I was going to say, isn't the military a great way to travel?
Yeah.
As a single person, like I think once you have a family, that's not...
No, that's not what you want to do.
Right.
So, like I said, he was raised a military brat. Morrison spent part of his childhood in San Diego, completed third grade in Northern Virginia at Fairfax County Elementary School, and attended Charles H. Flotto Elementary School in Kingsville, Texas, while his father was stationed at NAS Kingsville in 1952. He continued at St. John's Methodist School in Albuquerque and then Longfellow School sixth grade graduation program from San Diego. In 1957, Morrison attended Alameda High School in Alameda, California. For his freshman and first semester of his sophomore year, the Morrison family moved back to Northern Virginia in 59, and he graduated from George Washington High School, now a middle school, in Alexandria in June of 1961, a year before my mom was born. He was a voracious reader from an early age. Morrison was particularly inspired by the writings of several philosophers and poets. He was influenced by Nietzsche.
April's eyes just rolled so far into the back of her head.
Whose views on aesthetics, morality, and the Apollonian and Dionysian duality would appear in his conversation, poetry, and songs. Some of his formative influences were Parallel Lives and the works of the French symbolist poet Arthur Rimbaud, whose style would later influence the form of Morrison's short prose poems. He was also influenced by William S. Burroughs. That's the Naked Lunch Run. Oh, we'll get into France eventually here. Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, Louis Fernand Céline, Lawrence Ferretti, interesting, Charles Baudelaire, Vladimir Nabokov, Molière, Franz Kafka, Albert Camus, and Jean Cocteau, along with most of the French existentialist philosophers. His senior year, English teacher said, Jim, quote, reads as much and probably more than any student in class, but everything he reads is so offbeat and out there. So anyway, I suspected he was making them up when he told me the names of them. So he's like, his teacher's like, what is this shit?
He was a hipster before hipsters were a thing.
Yeah, he was a hippie before hippies. Like,
I'm reading Kafka, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah. See, I'm telling you, goth Ernie. Yeah, I like The Cure, I just don't talk about it. The Top's a great record. He was arrested at 19 in Tallahassee for drunken behavior at a football game. I mean, people are supposed to get rowdy at sporting events.
Yeah, I was going to say, in Hudsonville, you just call that school spirit.
Yeah. Take two large school spirits, please.
Morrison went to live with his paternal grandparents in Clearwater, Florida, and attended St. Petersburg Junior College. In 1962, he transferred to Florida State University in Tallahassee and appeared in a school recruitment film. So if any videographers out there want to find some young bootleg Jim Morrison, you know where to go.
Sounds like a Pornhub search.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, while at FSU, Morrison was arrested for his drunken disorderly. In January 1964, Morrison moved to LA to attend the UCLA, University of California in LA.
He went to some good colleges.
Yeah, he did.
If we're looking at the times, I'm kind of impressed because a lot of people are like, sixth grade?
Well, and a lot of those
a lot of
those colleges are very, like, liberal, like, artistically liberal schools too.
Yeah, like the Montessori schools where they're like, you're kids, but you're also the teachers.
We're not going to let you have Hot Wheels play with these colored blocks.
You grade your own work.
Anyway, so 7 months months later, his father commanded a carrier division of the U.S. fleet during the Gulf of Tonkin incident. At UCLA, Morris enrolled in Jack Hirschman's class on Antonin Artaud in the comparative literature program with the UCLA English, which I struggle with, English department. Artaud's brand of surrealist theater had a profound impact on Morrison's dark poetic sensibility of cinematic theatrically.
I was literally just going to say that. You took the words out of my mouth.
I love your poems.
Thank you.
They're beautiful.
Morrison completed his undergraduate degree at UCLA's film school with the theater within the theater arts department of the College of Fine Arts in 1965. At the time of the graduation ceremony, he went to Venice Beach, and the university mailed his diploma to his mother in Colorado. Welcome to Utah, Michigan. He made several short films while attending UCLA. First Love, the first of these films, made with Morrison's classmate and roommate, Max Schwartz, was released to the public when it appeared in a documentary about the film Obscura. During these years, while living in Venice Beach, he befriended writers at the Los Angeles Free Press, for which he advocated until his death in 1971. He conducted a lengthy and in-depth interview with Bob Chorish and Andy Kent, both working for the Free Press at the time. He was planning on visiting the headquarters of the busy newspaper shortly before leaving for Paris. Now, The Doors. Not this again. And every classic rock DJ rejoiced. The Doors. In the middle of 1965, after graduating with a bachelor's degree from the UCLA Film School, Morrison led a bohemian lifestyle in the Venice Beach, living on the rooftop of a building inhabited by his old UCLA cinematography friend, Dennis Jacob. He wrote the lyrics of many of the early songs The Doors would later perform live and record on albums such as Moonlight Drive and Hello, I Love You. According to Ray Manzarek, he lived on canned beans and LSD for several months.
That explains so much.
Isn't it Manzarek?
Manzarek, yeah. Sorry. Jeez. Jim Morrison was...
Dude, I'm totally tripping.
I know. Well, I was going to say, Jim Morrison was a beautiful man, but his farts must have been hellacious.
These pintos got me real fucked up, dude.
Better write a song about
it. Hey, Jim, hello. I need you to go fucking fart outside.
That was the original lyrics were, come on, baby, light my fart.
Ooh, that one broke out onto the other side.
he's like, this is the end? Question mark was supposed to be.
Riders on the Storm.
Anyway, so he was impressed with Morrison's poetic lyrics. Manzarek, who heard Manzarek, am I saying it right?
Manzarek.
Okay, so they met. Shows him his lyrics. He was impressed with Morrison's poetic lyrics, claiming that they were rock group material. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, guitarist Robbie Krieger and drummer John Densmore joined. I mean, I'd be impressed if somebody has like, I know they show it in the movie and that's cool and all, but I don't think I've ever met a singer who I've walked up and they're just like, can just sing a song or... Mm-hmm. You know, like
have lyrics already ready to go and have a melody ready. And
I've met a lot of guys who write lyrics. Now, are they good? It's like rephrased My Chemical Romance lyrics. I'm like, isn't that in the same cadence as the Black Parade? And they're like, no.
It's When I Was a Young Man. It's different.
Leave me alone. I'm Goth Ernie. All right, Krieger auditioned at Densmore's recommendation and was then added to the lineup. All three musicians shared a common interest in the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi meditation.
They will live on a
fucking rooftop. Let's eat some beans and our LSD. We are the most pompous people ever to be.
Can you imagine how fucking catastrophic Downward Dog would be after like 8 cans of beans? Just blasting liquid shits in your friend's face.
I'm surprised they're called the Doors and not the Hobos.
Right?
The Door was a reference to the asshole.
Plug it up, Jim. Anyway, so they're into yoga and meditation. Mm-hmm. Morrison was inspired to name the band after the title of Aldous Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception, a reference to the unlocking of doors of perception through psychedelic drug use. Huxley's own concept was based on a quotation from William Blake's The Marriage of Heaven and Hell, in which Blake wrote, quote, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is infinite. Hey, man, we're just all trying to break on through to the other side. So
stop eating all those beans. I can't help it. My rear admiral dad taught me.
Although Morrison was known as the lyricist of the group, Krieger also made lyrical contributions, writing or co-writing some of the group's biggest hits, including Light My Fire, Love Me Two Times, Lover Medley, and Touch Me. Sounds like a lot of like physical stuff right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a new song coming out called My Penis. On the other hand, Morrison, who did not write most songs using an instrument, would come up with vocal melodies for his own lyrics, with the other band members contributing chords and rhythm, which, I mean, that's cool. I think it would be cool if you can just like, I mean, I guess that would be like Josh coming to band practice and be like, this song goes, and I'm like, sounds a lot like Mountain to me. Like, whatever, man. It's influenced by Korn.
Do we have a cowbell?
We can. Larry, what are you doing on Thursdays? Just kidding.
I do have a cowbell.
Damn.
Don't you have an electric cowbell?
We can do that.
So,
there we go.
Morrison did not play an instrument live except for maracas and tambourine for most shows. So, sorry, maraca and tambourine players. Because it takes no practice to do your job. The sad truth.
Just looked at it. Yeah, I can play that.
Right?
Jesus. Would I just shake it? Okay.
Those little capuchin monkeys that you see in marketplaces can play a fucking tambourine.
Yeah. Welcome to the market. My kombucha monkey
literally
will play.
Drop it on the ground and you're playing the tambourine.
He just doesn't drink for a day, gets the DTs. He's playing
there you go.
Mean tambourine.
Jim, you need more beans?
He's not playing trumpet.
However, he did play the grand piano on Orange County Suite and a Moog synthesizer on Strange Days. Mm-hmm. Do you have one of those?
No, I can't afford those.
I know. Those things are those like $5,000 like at the
to
low
order.
Yeah.
I was at the factory, though.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's in Ashland, North Carolina.
Well, there you go. Shout out to our North Carolina listeners. When I can speak English. In June 1960...
Hey, it's the conspiracy therapy down in North Carolina.
Woo-wee, I got me one of them Moogs.
This week, and like all weeks, we're talking about Hunter Biden's emails.
Gas prices are higher than Hunter Biden.
Joe Biden fell off another bike. Idiot in chief.
I fell off my sister.
Who knew that putting a senior citizen in office would make this country fall to shit?
Anyway. Oh, that's the truth. That is actually
fucking truth.
In June 1960.
Too old to pilot a plane, but here, pilot the fucking country.
Hey, I can't pilot a bike either, to be fair.
Hey, man, shut up, man. You don't understand.
Listen, man.
Cracker Jack.
Anyway,
fiddlesticks and wrinkle balls.
Now I say, hold on here, cockapoo. That's a little too new wavy for me. In June of 1966, Morrison and the Doors were the opening act at the Whiskey A Go Go. Now, this would be an era to be there.
Yeah, no shit.
I just
except that night when the Doors were there.
Well, according to a lot of people, and there's like in one of the it's like the Final 24, which is a good series if you mm-hmm. look into like Hendrix and Janis Joplin and Morrison. There's one of the groupie, like famous groupies of the time was like, many times I would go there and see Jim Morrison literally laying in the street sleeping. Like,
I mean, when you're a hobo for long enough, yeah. anywhere is your bed.
He's such a hipster. He sleeps on the ground.
He's like, look, man, all I need is like a nice hard floor and a can of beans.
Just a urine-soaked
home sweet home.
Asphalt.
I mean, I can't. My nickname in the Navy for a brief period of time was hobo because I fell asleep outside of a bar while everyone was...
That is shocking.
That tracks.
I can't believe that happened.
I am so surprised by that information.
At least you didn't roll your eyes.
I had 27 two-hearteds and a bottle of rum.
Oh, boy. So anyway, Whiskey A Go-Go. They were the opening act at the Whiskey A Go-Go in the last week of the residency of Van Morrison's band, Them. Van's influence on Jim's developing stage performance was later noted by Brian Hinson in his book, Celtic Crossroads, The Art of Van Morrison. Jim Morrison learned quickly from his near namesake stagecraft, his apparent recklessness, his air of subdued menace, the way he would improvise poetry to a rock beat, even his habit of crouching down by the bass drum during instrumental breaks. On the final night, the two Morrisons and their two bands jammed together on Gloria. Van Morrison said about Jim Morrison's vocal performance, he was really raw, he knew what he was doing, and he could do it very well. In November of 66, Morrison and the Doors produced a promotional film for Break On Through to the Other Side, which was the first single released. The Doors achieved national recognition after signing with Elektra Records in 1967. I mean, if you're going to be in a place, LA is the place to be at this time. The single Light My Fire spent 3 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 charts in July and August of 1967. This was a far cry from the Doors opening for Simon and Garfunkel or playing at a high school as they did in Connecticut that same year. I mean, they started, but it took off as soon as that single
are
came
you
out.
Williamsburg High School, are you ready to rock?
These guys are lame.
Later, the Doors appeared on The Ed Sullivan Show, a popular Sunday night variety series that had introduced the Beatles and Elvis Presley to the U.S. Ed Sullivan requested two songs from the Doors for the show, People Are Strange and Light My Fire. Sullivan's censors insisted that Doors change the lyric of the song Light My Fire from Girl We Couldn't Get Much Higher to Girl We Couldn't Get Much Better for the television viewers. I just love that Ed Sullivan, like, I mean, it's Girl We Couldn't Get Much Better. Better at what?
Well, in the fact that, like, we all know what he's referring to, Girl We Couldn't Get Much Higher, but like, that's open to interpretation, right?
Right.
Like, maybe. That's a dumb thing to censor.
That's back when the Rolling Stones were banned for television for a lifetime, supposedly.
Right.
For saying pregnant. Mm-hmm. Singing the word pregnant. So, like,
because it'll instantly get a bunch of girls pregnant.
But tell me about how cancel culture is just run amok today. When Cardi B can sing WAP and no one even sneezes.
Yeah, and you...
Unless you're that little pint-sized... what's that guy's name?
Justin Bieber?
No. The political commentator.
Oh, Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's taller than me. I'm going to make a video.
WAP, she needs to have that checked out by a doctor.
My wife never gets wet. I don't know what she's talking about.
I believe
He said something close to that.
I may be smart, but I'm the nerdiest nerd who ever nerded. Ben Shapiro. Subscribe to Daily Wire Plus.
He went to like Home Depot, but he's like, I'd like one wood, please.
Just showing off the shopping bed is like a piece of like plywood in it. It's like, I'd like one wood
and a bag of Skittles. Don't tell my wife.
And I'll take a screw. Thank you.
Girl, we couldn't get much better.
So this was reportedly due to that it was perceived as usage of drugs. After giving assurances of compliance to the producer in the dressing room, the band agreed and proceeded to sing the song with the original lyrics. And everybody got pregnant and everyone did drugs. So Sullivan was not happy and he refused to shake hands with Morrison or any other band member after the performance. Like, what did the keyboard player have to do with that?
Right.
He's like, probably the one like, yo, Jim, you got to do it, man. You got to do it, man.
Add a fuck in there, too. And I'll drop that key bass.
Lick your fingers like you're licking vagina.
Pull your dick out and draw a face on it.
As a keyboard player, I can tell you exactly what the keyboard player was doing.
What?
Drooling.
I mean, he had to play the bass parts, too, so...
Exactly.
Guitarist, you got to replace the drool fucking bucket for the keyboards. He got a little carried away. So they would never again appear on the Ed Sullivan Show. Morrison reportedly said to the producer in a defiant tone, "Hey, man, we just did the Sullivan Show," which I think he was just like, "We're not coming back."
Yeah.
By the release of their second album, Strange Days, the Doors had become one of the most popular rock bands in the U.S. Their blend of blues and dark psychedelic rock included a number of original songs and distinctive cover versions, such as the rendition of Alabama Song. The band also performed a number of extended concept works, including the songs The End, When the Music's Over, and Celebration of the Lizard, which, you know, exacerbates his whole, "I'm the Lizard King."
He's the Lizard King. He drank the water.
He can do everything.
The water turned him gay.
Yeah.
And this episode of the Conspiracy Therapy from North Carolina, sponsored by InfoWars. Get yourself some pharmaceuticals from Alex Jones. He's trusted.
Male shield. It contains elk urine and mercury. It's good for you.
Say three.
Say
three prayers to Jesus. Do three spinning attacks, and you will define your enemies with your kicks. When you take these, not
alpha male shield.
Yeah,
with more elk urine.
I just don't. Anyway, all right, folks. We love you all. So, some of you. So, continuing on. In 1968, the Doors released their third studio album, Waiting for the Sun. The band performed on July 5th at the Hollywood Bowl. This performance became famous on the DVD Live at the Hollywood Bowl. It's also this year that the band played for the first time in Europe. Their fourth album, The Soft Parade, was released in 69. It was the first album where the individual band members were given credit on the inner sleeve of the songs they had written. Previously, each song in their albums had been credited simply to The Doors. September 6th and 7th, 1968, the Doors played four performances at the Roundhouse, London, England, with Jefferson Airplane, which was filmed by Granada for a television documentary, The Doors Are Open, directed by John Shep. Now we're just rolling our eyes at documentary filmmaker titles.
I went to see Jefferson Airplane, but then the doors were open. Girly couldn't get much better.
There's this horrible alter universe where all these stupid things happen, and it just makes me mad. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that people can do stuff like this, like go on the Ed Sullivan Show and still say, you know, Higher? The original, like, yeah.
Oh my!
I know it's warped everyone's minds.
People passed out in the front row because they heard Higher.
A lot of Pearl culture that night.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. By early 1969, the formerly svelte singer...
More pearl had, clutching than a $5 hooker.
Right. Now, I will mention, there was this whole period where everyone... I mean, because after the iconic picture of him, like, shirtless on the Village Voice and pretty much into the future, like, he'd gained this rock star persona, and he hated it. Like, by all accounts, I mean, maybe
Kate
he...
Kurt Cobain.
Maybe he 80% hated, loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, with a 20% secret super love for it. I don't know. But I know that wherever they went, they were like rock gods and Jim was the leader. Mm-hmm. But he wanted to be known as poet.
Well, then maybe you should have been a poet instead of a rock star.
Right. I know. It's like... A famous chef, like, I know I made, you know, this incredible creme de moule, but I want to be known as a lumberjack, okay?
Yeah.
Have you seen my birdhouses? I'm just saying. But...
Are you just saying?
I'm just saying.
Okay, I was just making sure.
Anyway, so the formerly svelte singer had gained weight, grown a beard, and begun dressing more casually, abandoning the leather pants and concho belts for slacks, jeans, and t-shirts.
Hey, just like Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Right. During a concert on March 1st at the Dinner Key Auditorium, that is the most... White Toast fucking amphitheater name or whatever I've ever heard. Dinner Key. Okay. Anyway, in Miami, Morrison attempted to spark a riot in the audience in part by screaming, "You want to see my cock?" Which sounds very poetic. And other obscenities. 3 days later, 6 warrants for his arrest were issued by the Dade County Police Department for indecent exposure. Now, I will say, according to the doc I watched, like 50% of the audience got naked. Dude took his shirt off. They're like, damn. And he was about
doing this.
And the keyboardist was like, don't let him show his shit. Because like at this point, they'd already had infractions, especially with the Ed Sullivan show. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff we'll get into in the second segment. Like people were not. Even the FBI, which I'll get into more, was like, who the fuck is this guy? They didn't like hippies. You know, you still got fucking, what's his name? J. Edgar Crossdresser mm-hmm. up in there going like, these hippies are going to defile our things. They've had it too nice for too long and Vietnam's not going to plan. But don't tell anyone I said that. Lyndon Big Balls Johnson is in, mm-hmm. you know, president or whatever. People aren't happy. So, consequently, many of the Doors' scheduled concerts were canceled due to this. And on September 20th, 1970, Morrison was convicted of indecent exposure. But according to some reports, he didn't show anything. It's just that the people got so out of hand, they just were like, fuck it. It was his fault.
Wasn't it because of all that that the Doors were not allowed to play at Woodstock?
Something like that, yeah.
Would.
Morrison, who attended the October 30th sentencing, quote, in a wool jacket adorned with Indian designs, unquote, silently listened as he was sentenced to 6 months in prison and had to pay a $500 fine. Morrison remained free on a $50,000 bond. At the sentencing, Judge Murray Goodman told Morrison that he was a person graced with a talent admired by many of his peers. Hmm. I mean, he recognizes it. I don't feel like, because there's always certain players in these stories where it's like, I don't feel like that guy in particular in that state were doing anything but just following orders. Mm-hmm. I do think it was more of a fire was being lit in the media just to get him to stop and go away.
So mm-hmm. to speak.
Indeed. Morrison expressed both bafflement and clarity about the Miami incident, clarifying, I wasted a lot of time and energy with the Miami trial, about a year and a half, but Jesus. I guess it was a valuable experience because before the trial, I had a very unrealistic schoolboy attitude about the American judicial system. My eyes have been opened up a bit. There were guys down there, black guys, that would go each day before I went on. It took about 5 minutes and they would get 20 or 25 years in jail. If I hadn't had unlimited funds to continue fighting my case, I'd be in jail right now for 3 years. It's just if you have money, you generally don't go to jail.
Yeah.
The man's a poet. On December 8th, 2010, the 67th anniversary... 2010, yeah.
Okay.
The 67th anniversary of Morrison's birth, Republican Florida Governor Charlie Crist and the State Clemency Board unanimously signed a complete posthumous pardon for Morrison.
No, I'm sure so that helped him.
He came back out of the ground. That's it. Hey,
thanks, guys.
All right, I'm going back. It's like Jack Skellington. Following the soft parade, the Doors released Morrison Hotel after a lengthy break. The group reconvened in October 1970. And there was actually a point in one of the shows where the drummer was literally like, I'm out. Because he would just get bafflingly drunk mm-hmm. and just...
I know that feeling.
The show was just terrible. Or it was incredible. Because he had this Jekyll and Hyde personality where he was this amazing, affable, likable, curious...
And I just literally watched a documentary the last 2 days of Bob Forrest from Thelonious Monster. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Alcohol, and we'll get into it more, especially...
He was into heroin, too.
Yeah, and we'll get into that, too. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to...
Don't be born.
No more born.
No more born. Heroin is bad. If there's anything, really? If there's anything, you know,
don't say.
I know enough people say it, but it's just it should be repeated. Please, if you're going to try drugs, maybe stick to things like caffeine, Sudafed. Nicotine, and Sudafed, not heroin. Right,
and leave.
I'm 46. Yes, my ibuprofen is my drug of choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Alka-Seltzer too. Okay. When you're feeling salty,
I've got a bottle in every room of the house.
Oh, Pepto Bismol.
So let's talk a bit about
those Pepto Bismol. Sorry, those Pepto Bismol commercials make diarrhea sound fun.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Indigestion.
Diarrhea. I like when my asshole sounds like a saxophone. It's cool. Jim Morrison did it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a poet.
Right. Now, his initial death, according to Robbie Krieger, I got a phone call and didn't believe it because we used to hear shit like that all the time, that Jim jumped off a cliff or something. So we sent our manager off to Paris, and he called and said it was true.
You know what's crazy about this? I don't know if you have it written down or not, but this was not long after the rumors of past episode, Paul McCartney being dead.
True. Yeah,
this is like weeks after.
A lot of bored people.
This is literally, yeah, because they were talking about it. They're like Paul McCartney and blah blah blah, and then like this is like the genesis of so many conspiracies. Mm-hmm. This era, after recording "L.A. Woman" with the Doors in Los Angeles, Morrison announced to the band his intention to go to Paris. His bandmates generally felt it was a good idea. In March of 1971, he joined his girlfriend Pamela Corson in Paris at an apartment she had rented for him at 1719 Rue Bautre in Le Marais, 4th arrondissement. In letters to friends, In letters to friends, he described going for long walks through the city alone. During this time, he shaved his beard, lost some of the weight he had gained in the previous months from alcohol, whiskey.
Mm-hmm. I just picture him looking like Bert Kreischer for a while.
Yeah. Yep.
Joe, I'm doing really good now.
Red, hairy man.
Yeah. Drinking Kool-Aid all the time, too.
Yep. Jesus. Well,
Kool-Aid with vodka in it. Yeah.
Honestly, it kind of shocks me. He's still
Bert
on the right side of the ground.
No shit.
On July 3rd, 1971, a day before our nation's independence, Morrison was found dead in the bathtub of the apartment at approximately 6 a.m. by Pamela Corson. Ouch. He was 27 years... Soundboard. Great! He was 27 years old. The official cause of death was listed as heart failure, although no autopsy was performed, as it was not required by French law. It has also been reported by several individuals who say they were eyewitnesses that his death was due to an accidental...
No, it was due for not smoking enough cigarettes.
That's right. Of which we're going to do real soon. They were saying it was accidental heroin overdose, which, as we'll hear, he vehemently denied ever doing heroin.
Hmm. Or I think you say he denied it. Like, or that didn't die from heroin.
That's right. Ridiculous.
As he's a ghost. It was suggested that his death was kept as a secret, and the reporters who had telephoned to Paris were... had responded by saying that Morrison was not deceased, but tired and resting at a hospital.
So there was deep sleep. Mm-hmm.
So there was some like not good communication happening. His death came 2 years to the day after the death of Rolling Stone founding guitarist Brian Jones, and
future
approximately
episode.
9 months after the deaths of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. All of these popular musicians died at the age of 27, leading to the emergence of the 27 Club. Now, let's talk about that before we take a break.
Okay.
I have this marked. Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Jim Morrison all died at the age of 27, between 1969 and 1971.
Welcome to Club 27. Ladies, drink free.
At the time, the coincidence gave rise to some comment, but it was not until Kurt Cobain's 1994 death at age 27 that the idea of a 27 club began to catch on in public perception. Blues musician Robert Johnston, who died in 1938, is one of the earliest popular musicians to be included in the list of 27 club members. According to Hendrix and Cobain's biographer, Charles R. Cross, the growing importance of the media, internet, magazine, and television in the response to an interview of Cobain's mother were jointly responsible for such theories. An excerpt from a statement that Cobain's mother, Wendy Fredenberg Cobain O'Connor, made in the Aberdeen, Washington newspaper, The Daily World, quote, "Now he's gone and joined that stupid club. I told him not to join that that stupid club." Unquote, referred to Hendrix, Joplin, and Morrison dying at the same age. According to Cross, other authors share his view. On the other hand, Eric Segalstad, writer of The 27s, The Greatest Myth of Rock and Roll, assumed that Cobain's mother referred to the death of his two uncles and his great uncle, all of whom had also committed suicide, thinking it was that club.
Not a club you want to be a part of.
No. Suicide's bad. Use the national hotline. Call someone. Talk to somebody. Please, please, please. According to Cross, the events have led to a set of conspiracy theorists who suggest the absurd notion that Kurt Cobain intentionally timed his death so he could join the 27 Club. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention in 2011, 17 years after Cobain's death, Amy Winehouse died at the age of 27, prompting a renewed swell of media attention devoted to said club. We're going to take a break, come back, get into the conspiracies.
There are things that are known and things that are unknown in between are the doors. William Blake wrote that and Jim Morrison used it to name his group, a group that became as much a part of street theater as rock music. Profane, indecent, and lewd were what the critics called the doors. Erotic politicians was what they called themselves. When Jim Morrison and the Doors performed, he would often reel across the stage like an insane, bellowing drunk, almost totally out of control. The Doors were the black priests of the Great Society, and they make Alice Cooper seem almost respectable by comparison. But unlike Alice, Morrison's frenzy and chaos wasn't part of his act, it was part of his life. Goodnight America's Harold Green spoke with Bill Siddons. He was the Doors' road manager and Morrison's closest friend.
The landlord's family.
When I first met Jim, I started out working with them, taking care of their equipment and any various business they had. And I knew nothing about music and nothing about what was happening those days. And I just met this man who I immediately recognized as supremely intelligent, but also supremely crazy.
And in what way was he crazy? What do you mean by crazy?
His mind was just in very different places than most normal people's. His concerns were not of, the kind of things we think about. He was just constantly exploring new things and trying to find out everything about life in the shortest amount of time possible.
Did you think Jim Morrison would ever live to be 30 years of age?
No, none of us did. It was a commonly understood thing among the Doors and myself and our business manager, Bob Green. We just never thought Jim would make it past 30 because he lived too hard.
Good band to cover for like anyone into like cool variations like jazz. And
I was gonna say, I could see Larry doing some like lo-fi covers of the Doors.
I mean, even Snoop Dogg covered it.
Yeah
for Need for Speed Underground 2.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so Pam Corson was Morrison's longtime girlfriend, and she was played by Meg Ryan in the movie. She stated that on July... Yes, right. She's a Fox man. Or at least she was back in the day. Corson stated that on July 3rd, 1971, she awoke to find Morrison dead in the bathtub of their apartment in Paris. The coroner's report listed his cause of death as heart failure, although no autopsy was performed. Now, considering friend Diane Gardner is quoted as saying in the book Break On Through by Rodin Prishnickides. Yeah, whatever. Pam was one of the funniest people I ever met. She was beautiful. She looked like the Snow Queen, and yet she did things like collect Lugers.
These are all things I'd describe Larry like.
She had a vicious sense of humor. She loved travel because she said you'd never had to think about it.
That sounds okay.
It's be nice when you're rich.
When you were traveling and you were a tourist, you got up and life happened to you. I liked her. She was the most dangerous girl I ever met. After Jim died and we were both just out of our heads, we would do things like go to Tijuana and get crazy. We check into sleazy hotels and go down to Rosarito Beach and drink everything in sight. One time, this guy that was with us yelled some really bad things to La Policia, and they came after us. This just sounds like the weird Californian blonde girls. Oh, like, yeah. One time we went to the beach and then like my flip-flop got stuck and I was like, oh my God, crazy things happen when you're a tourist. You just get up and like life happens to you. Pass a margarita. Oh my God. I have
sounds like she
again.
Could be on Jersey Shore.
Yeah, right? One guy was trying to take the keys to Pam's new VW away, so I hit him over the head with my shoe. We had to pay off on our MasterCard. We ran it through at a hotel, and they actually let us charge our bribe. I don't behave like that normally. Pam had that kind of effect on me.
And then JWoww took a piss behind the bar, and then Vinny and Ron were fighting, and they threw a mattress out the window.
Snooky! Hey, get in here! Fucking bitch. All right. Death and estate controversy. So after Morrison's death, Corson continued to live in LA. Former Doors manager Janie Sugarman became friendly with her in LA during this time and later wrote in Wonderland Avenue Tales of Glamour and Excess about an experience of taking Quaaludes and snorting heroin with Corson. So she sounds like a real fun party gal.
Right.
On April 25th, 1974, love the ending of that. Corson died of a heroin overdose. 74. She was also 27.
I she died 74 of a heroin overdose.
Wow. Way to she go, was Grandma. A party girl.
To the end.
Pass the Quaaludes.
Yes, just a sec. I'm gonna do a line.
Every good snort should end with a nice April. Oh. Like Morrison, as I said, she was 27 when she died. Her cremated remains were interred in the mausoleum at Fairhaven Memorial Park in Santa Ana, California. The plaque reads Pamela Suzanne Morrison.
Hmm. After they cremated her, they put her in nice straight lines.
Yep. And then my friend Becky and I snorted her, and I was like, Pam, you're crazy. Jim Morrison's parents,
like a fucking Hoover,
later contested the Corson's executorship. So they were like, hey, wait, that's our son. We control. You know,
yeah, legally they do.
Of the estate, leading to additional legal battles. In 1979, both parties agreed to divide the earnings from Morrison's estate equally. Get a prenup. Even if you're, well, technically they weren't even married.
No.
Yeah.
She's lucky she got half.
Yeah, no kidding.
Kind of. Also, he did have a strong libido in life, just so we were clear. He wasn't particularly faithful. As first written about in No One Here Gets Out Alive, Break On Through, and later in her own memoir, Strange Days, My Life With and Without Jim Morrison, Morrison participated in a Celtic pagan hand fasting ceremony with rock critic Patricia Keenly. The couple signed a handwritten document and were declared wed.
I hope they did that beforehand, so to speak.
Hey, man, this is how we make a sigil.
Break on through! Paper stuck to my hand.
The couple signed a handwritten document and were declared wed by a Celtic high priestess and high priest on Midsummer's Night in 1970.
Wow.
But none of the necessary paperwork for a legal marriage was filed with the state.
This guy.
So let's talk a bit about his final writings. After his death, a notebook of poetry written by Morrison was recovered, titled Paris Journal. Amongst other personal details, it contains the allegorical foretelling of a man who will be left grieving and having to abandon his belongings due to a police investigation into a death connected to the Chinese opium trade. Almost went off. I went the wrong way for a second there in my head. Weeping, he left his pad on orders from police and furnishings hauled away all records and mementos and reports. Reporters calculating tears and curses for the press. I hope the Chinese junkies get you, and they will, for the opium rules the world. Don't do it. So, the concluding stanzas of this poem convey disappointment for someone with whom he had an intimate relationship, and contain a further invocation of Billy the Killer / Hitchhiker, a common character in Morrison's body of work. Which is kind of plays into that Jekyll and Hyde persona. Mm-hmm. Quote, this is my poem for you. Great flowing, funky flowered beast. Great perfumed wreck of hell. Someone new in your knickers. And who would that be? You know more than you let on. Tell them you came and saw and looked into my eyes and saw the shadow of the guard receding. Thoughts in time and out of the season, the hitchhiker stood by the side of the road and leveled his thumb in the calm calculus of reason.
That's deep.
Heavy, man.
In 2007, a former New York Times journalist named Sam Bennett, who had once managed the Rock and Roll Circus Club in Paris, came forward with an alarming,
I have a story to tell you. Ha ha ha!
In Bennett's telling,
Jim Morrison did not die in no bathtub.
Instead, his book, The End, Jim Morrison claims that the Doors frontman actually died in a toilet.
What?
At Rock and Roll Circus.
Oh, just like me, man.
Watch out, man. I left a stinker in there. So what'll happen with you? LSD, and beans.
Goddamn hobos. While in Paris, Morrison had certainly spent countless nights at the venue, often alongside Corson, Pam. But on July 3rd, 1971, Bennett allegedly saw him meeting up with two drug dealers before he headed to the bathroom around 2 a.m. When Morrison failed to reemerge, Bennett had a bouncer kick the door down, only to find him unconscious. Hey, man, knock before you come in. And they confirmed Morrison was dead. The flamboyant singer of the Doors, the beautiful California boy, had become an inert lump crumpled in the toilet of a nightclub, wrote Bennett. When he found him dead, he had a little foam on his nose and some blood, too, and the doctor said, this must be an overdose of heroin.
I am a brilliant French doctor, and I can tell he has mochaccino coming out of his butt, and his nose, it is a white creme brulee. Yes, it's clearly heroin. Thank you, French Detective Bernard. You're welcome.
So, according to an article from People.com, did this French aristocrat have a hand in the...
We cannot get out of gay Paris!
Did this French aristocrat have a hand in the deaths of Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, and other 60s icon? Count Jean...
Oh, no.
Oh, oh no.
Lord. Oh, boy.
You're gonna wear that soundboard button out.
Jean du Breteuil.
I am a shadowy figure about which little is known.
To some, he was a handsome, jet-setting playboy who squandered his life of luxury. To others, he was the snake that slithered into the 60s Garden of Eden.
playing the snake. A beautiful band snake.
By most accounts, the self-styled dealer to the stars pandered to the vices of the rich and famous, enabling the addictions of, that cost many of their lives. He was born in 1949 to an aristocratic Parisian family who owned the
mother, dad, brother, and sister, who I love. Dime three.
So, this French newspapers in Francophone North Africa is what they owned. Following the death of his father in 1960, young Brutel stood to inherit a substantial fortune and a title, making him the latest count in a lineage that stretched back over 500 years. No inbreeding. He was a handsome and communicative guy. I threw that in there. An associate recalled in the Spanish publication El Pas, quote, he belonged to a circle of bohemian boys from well-to-do families who smoked hashish, took LSD, and traveled to India. They could afford it. His father's business interests in Africa put Brutel in contact with operatives at the Moroccan embassy, though, through which he reportedly began trafficking drugs, first hashish and eventually heroin. 27-year-old Jim Morrison was found dead in his bathtub, as we said, on his Paris of his Paris apartment in the early morning hours of July 3rd, 1971, according to the official story. A French medical examiner ruled that a heart attack and
he is dead, boss. Case closed. Time for lunch.
He was attacked by his own head.
Stop. It is time for a nap.
Frere Joker. All right. Morrison's death has become the rock and roll equivalent of the JFK assassination. This is according to the People article. Mm-hmm. Spawning a dizzying array of legends that mix fact and myth. Finding the truth at the heart of these wildly divergent tales becomes less possible with each passing year. But amidst the confusion and misinformation, one man's name appears regularly. And this is Petit. Because he was part of this. And in fact, there's a movie called The Fresh French Connection, which deals which you had the perfect French laugh there too.
Oh,
sacré bleu.
We love our French listeners too. So as you said, he is a really not a very he's like French Hunter Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can find him,
right?
Where's my laptop?
So it was likely around this time that he met Pamela Corson, because at one point he did actually go to UCLA. Mm-hmm. He's like, I can go where I want. I'll get an education where I want to, you mm-hmm. know, basically. And at that time, he was selling drugs there too. And Corson, if there's anything to kind of attach to her as a like a shitty vice, it was the heroin.
Yeah.
In the midst of her tempestuous and reportedly open long-term relationship with Morrison, she was captivated by this Frenchman. He had the noble background and loved the idea. She loved the idea of dating what she loftily called real French royalty.
Ooh.
On Brutel's arm, Corson gained entry to the fabulously wealthy French consular crowd, a coterie of exquisitely dressed, beautiful people flying high on Lear jets and the drugs stashed in their diplomatic pouches. Together,
that's their butt.
Together, she and Brutel took trips abroad, purchasing exotic fabrics and materials to stock Themis, the clothing store Morrison had bought her.
Mm.
The Doors singer was less than impressed by this rival for Corson's affections. His 1968 song Love Street is said to reference Corson's shopping excursions with Brutel, whom he loathed. Quote, she has robes and she has junkies, lazy diamond-studded flunkies. Hmm. That's a nice bar there, Morrison.
Right.
Tensions mounted as Corson began sampling Brutel's deadly wares. Morrison hated heroin, and his burgeoning alcoholism shortened his temper. Shouting matches were frequent between the two. Corson usually stormed out, often finding solace in her French drug man. So this is a major trafficking hub in Paris in 1971. It was awash with exceptionally pure heroin smuggled into the country through the port of Marseille. The famous French Connection, as I mentioned, immortalized in William Friedkin's Oscar-winning film of the same name. Shortly before Morrison's death, he pored over the Newsweek cover story, The Heroin Plague, which traced the abnormally high number of overdoses across Europe and the U.S. The magazine issued was dated July 5th, 1971. Morrison wouldn't live to see that date. So it's like one of the last things he saw.
Mm-hmm.
While juggling these numerous affairs, Brutel somehow also found time to entertain Corson, who visited that June. Soon after, at the beginning of July, Brutel and another famous rock star, another famous rock star at the time, traveled to Paris. They were in bed at La Hotel. La Restaurant.
We do not have time to make up names for everything. Go to the post office and get your mail. Le nerd.
So the five.
I'm going to Le Toy Store.
The five-star accommodations at Le Hotel were where Oscar Wilde lived out his last days. Was where they were hanging out when the phone rang. It was after midnight on Saturday, July 3rd, when he got a call from Pamela Morrison, and he had to leave very suddenly, said the anonymous rock star lady that was with him. She begged to go too, desperate to meet the Doors rock god in the flesh, but Brutel abruptly refused, quote, "Not now. I'll explain later, okay? Be right back." He slammed out of the room, but he didn't come right back. He returned in the early hours of the morning in a very agitated state and woke her up. He ordered the groggy young rock star, I don't know why it's anonymous, to get packed at once. They were headed to Morocco. He was scared for his life. She continues, Jim Morrison had OD'd and he had provided the smack. Gene saw himself as dealer to the stars. Now he was a small-time heroin dealer. And there are people that say that he's also in charge of what Janis Joplin took before she died.
Mm.
So Brutel's actions after leaving in the pre-dawn hours of July 3rd are impossible to prove. Corson, Pamela, never mentioned Brutel in her detailed statement to French authorities. But his presence at her apartment that morning is confirmed by Elaine Ronet, a friend of Morrison's, who came to assist after his body was found. In an interview with Paris Match in 1991, Elaine Ronet says he was approached by a long-haired man in a silk scarf and leather jacket outside the door to Corson's home at 17 Rue Bautrice. He looked like a ruffian, Ronet noted. I wanted to spank his tailor. That is such a fucking French statement.
I wanted to spank his tailor and uppercut his babair.
It's just... Anyway, most of the major characters in this scene are dead. So you can't really... And they're all drug addicts or alcoholics or beatnik poets who...
Eat beans.
So... Corson succumbed to her addiction in April of 1974, just weeks after a court declared her Morrison's legal heir. Brutel himself died less than a year after Morrison in Tangier on June 25th, 1972, at age 22. Mm. Live fast, die young.
Right.
The enormous quantity of heroin in his system reportedly led police to rule his death a suicide or an unsolved murder.
Mm.
One of the only survivors in the story was... the lady that was with him at the time, again, I think her last name's Faithful. I know I said Faith Hill. I don't have the first name. Who regained her health and career after a lengthy period of addiction, anorexia, and homelessness. In a 2014 interview with Mojo, she once again implicated Brutel in the death of the Doors legend. Quote, "He went to see Jim Morrison and killed him," she claimed. "I mean, I'm sure it was an accident. Poor bastard. The smack was too strong and he died." And that's the story as I know it. There were a lot of varying degrees and things we could get into before we get into the verdict. But I want to say this. I started reading a book called Chaos, specifically about the idea that Charles Manson was an informant to the FBI and the effect that things like MK Ultra had on the public populace and how government was trying to shut down radical thinking and different, like Black Panther organization and different things like that. And I would highly recommend it if you're looking at, if you just want to go down the conspiracy wormhole, just don't fall too deep, because like you said, this is therapy, not just conspiracy. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if there was an angle to take here to say that the government didn't want Jim Morrison around, especially after how intense things got in Miami for him, because he technically fled the country, and mostly because he didn't want to serve time. He was so scared to serve time, and he was also really scared of dying. I mean, that comes up a lot. And in his last 24 hours, he goes out to lunch with that Alain Ronay guy, and basically he's just sitting there like shaking, you know. Mm-hmm. He still like ends up drinking that day, and he asks Elaine to go out and have a beer or a whiskey with him. But eventually, granted, they didn't have an autopsy, but something either led to him overdosing and his curiosity. And I wonder if it has to do with Pamela Corson. And it was just like, you know, you dance with the devil so many times, alcohol depletes your judgment process. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you just fall into it. But this is all aligning into what we should get into next, which is the verdict. In one corner, four podcasters who will speak in French all they want, but won't do it anymore because we've literally hit our French legal limit. Mm-hmm. At this point, yep. We need to pull over and get real with you. In the other corner,
beans.
Beans and LSD. And we have to tell ourselves, hey, do we think Jim Morrison just had an overdose, or do you think there was foul play involved? Or maybe a French connection?
Ooh.
I'm going to go with you, Josh. What do you think? Or maybe the government. Who knows?
I think Jim Morrison was murdered.
Really?
We know that he did not like heroin. We know that, yes, he was drunk, but how many times have you been really drunk and said, you know what, I'm going to have heroin?
Never.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how drunk I've ever been. It's not led me to wanting to do stuff like that. That's a different story. But anyways,
well,
we know that he had this huge issues with that other guy. And so I think that he was murdered by him, and then maybe he injected heroin into his system afterwards. There's a lot, and I think Pamela was involved because she had a lot to gain from this. I mean, yes, they weren't technically married, but she took his money afterwards and went and partied.
Mm-hmm.
But heroin wouldn't go anywhere in your system if your heart's not beating.
That's true. But they wouldn't know that because they didn't do an autopsy. The guy came in and said, oh, it's a heart attack. He's dead.
There's enough gray area in here for me to understand your thinking.
Yeah, it just seems like no autopsy. Only she saw the body, and
there was a French fireman.
There's only two people that ever saw the body after he died. There's too many things that are red flags.
And there was a closed casket.
Yeah, just which why would they consider. Have a closed casket if it was...
And he's French aristocracy. This isn't just like, you know, Pepe Le Pew or some shit.
Exactly.
Not a real skunk.
Wait, what?
I believe he was murdered. There was too much to gain by the people that would have done it that would make it worthwhile. And all they had to do was slip a couple bucks to somebody and say, yep, hey, make this just go away.
Hmm. I like it. April?
I think it was suicide. It sounded to me like he was experiencing some pretty severe paranoia and some mental health issues in the time following his departure from Miami, the time that he had spent in Paris. You know, if he thinks he's being chased, if he thinks he's being watched, because it sounds like he had mental health issues from a very young age. So this is something that...
It only gets exacerbated.
Right, and then you drink and you do drugs. Like, your brain, after so much LSD, ceases to be able to function properly.
His primary was definitely whiskey and beer, though.
Right.
Which but you're right. It does
still,
that.
Like when you're depressed and taking a depressant is like you're only making it
perpetuating.
Exactly. It. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, did he like heroin? No. But I think he knew that if he took enough of it, it would kill him. I think he took that amount of heroin on purpose because he was not in a healthy place mentally. I think his brain just snapped.
Right.
And the paranoia, the shaking, the, you know, he had lost weight, whether that was intentional or not. I think it was.
And this is at a time when 27 felt like it was old.
Right.
Because, exactly. Like, he's even talking with an interviewer about the younger generation, and he's just like,
right.
The kids these days, well, blah, blah, blah.
And with impending jail time.
Yeah,
you know,
impending jail time.
He literally said, like, I would rather die than be in jail.
And he wanted to be a poet, and his book of poetry had come out, and the critics had literally just slayed it. They're like, you're a fucking rock star, not a poet. And that obviously brought him down.
Right. So that's my take.
Okay, Larry, what do you think?
I mean, heart attack tracks with alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is awful for the heart. He'd gained weight. There may have been an underlying heart condition. I mean, we've seen pro athletes just drop dead.
That's true.
Right.
But the suicide thing is so good. That is a good thing to bring that you brought up there. But I think it tracks with the heart issues, track with the alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not getting sleep. He's passing out.
Yeah.
You know, that stresses your heart out awful.
Very true.
I think he just had a massive heart attack.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
So we have murder, suicide.
Accidental.
Well, maybe not, but just
health
natural.
Problems, natural causes.
A full spectrum.
Wow.
Yeah. I think
it's a good way to describe this podcast.
I would also say, and I'll end this by saying, I think Jim Morrison was in some ways going through one of his darker periods, because at the time he's living in France with his girlfriend, and part of that was to get away from the shit that happened in Miami. Another part of it, I think, at the time was to hopefully write better, because he'd obviously suffered from alcoholism his whole life at this point. I mean, he started really early. And I think he did try heroin, especially because, I mean, he's surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. It's the thing. His main love interest is dealing with that, with the French aristocrat guy. So I think the things just all collide in the one terrible mess at one time. I mean, the guy was even his band members were like telling the roadies, make sure he doesn't take his pants off on stage. You couldn't trust him.
Right.
And you couldn't trust him even when you were the love of his life, because he couldn't control anything. And the Lizard King, may he rest in peace.
Well, and if I can add one thing, just sort of in terms of suicide, like my take on it, I think too, Jim Morrison is the kind of person, and this sort of plays back into what I had mentioned before about this whole, like, he's just that guy, you know what I mean?
No.
Not that suicide is glorified in any way, but he strikes me as the kind of person who's like, this is so just fucking poetic. If I just write this real cryptic shit and then I kill myself. You know what I mean? Like,
he would be immortalized.
Right.
And,
like,
and if you're talking mental illness.
Exactly. You know, I think if he looked at it in a way that's like, if I'm going down, I'm going to make it.
I'm going to do it on my own terms.
I'm going to do it on my own because.
Well, and also some of the roadies I was listening to in interviews were talking about how he was talking at one point about throwing a whiskey bottle through a window and how he felt no remorse about his actions. Mm-hmm. And the guy says at that moment while he's being interviewed that, you know, honestly, I think he was a sociopath in some ways. So, and a lot of times those type of people take the easy way out. So I can honestly, and I'll say this for once, I kind of agree with all three of you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's crazy to think that he was ever on this planet, because I thought he was a phenomenal musician. I dig the Doors. If you do too, check them out. If you don't, that's fine. We can have difference of opinions, and that's been your verdict.
You know what's really interesting too is there was actually a couple other small conspiracies I saw. One was that he faked his death.
I did.
Densmore was like, yeah, I could very much see him doing that, faking his own death because he hated the fame.
He's on an island with Tupac and Biggie.
No, there was a this theory that he started
and
a
Elvis.
He was part of like this ranch
JFK.
He changed his name. And they showed a picture of the guy who owns this ranch from like not that long ago. And they're like, yeah, if you put Jim Morrison's picture over this guy's face, like, and compare him, he has a lot of the same features.
Tim Morrison Dude Ranch. Wow.
No, it was actually called like the Jim Morrison Sanctuary. And this dude looks just like Jim Morrison, just, you know, 30 years older.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, though, because I didn't really hit on it at all. I mean, I wanted to mention some aspects, but I mean, this isn't the Jim Morrison conspiracy therapy hour, or else we could go.
I mean, technically it was.
Yeah, you're right.
I know what you mean.
But anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out at Conspiracy Therapy Show on the TikToks, YouTube, Conspiracy Therapy. Like and review us on stuff. If you haven't done that in a while, tell your neighbor. Be like, hey, fucker, rate and review my friends. You know, make us feel better.
Yeah.
Larry's still rocking it on Spotify.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything's up now.
Everything.
Have you made any money yet?
No. Not even a penny. I think you get to have like 10,000 downloads or something to make like $1.
Jeez.
You get like $10 off at Walmart.
So that's okay. So everyone go on Spotify and just let it play.
Set it up, play it overnight.
Uh-huh. Yep. Just on repeat. Let's get Larry's first dollar.
Yeah. So I can retire.
Or just buy it on Bandcamp.
20,000.
Right, yeah. That too.
Do that too.
I mean, if you figure a song is $1, you got plenty of money. You could donate that way, or you could put $5 this month towards something great like the Patreon.
Patreon's a good investment right there.
It is.
You get so much back catalog.
Back catalog up the wazoo, folks. Lots of episodes. We already have the July episode up, and me and Josh might be working on a little something. So watch that Patreon and see all the newness flourish. Does anybody have anything they'd like to throw out there before we end this baddest bear? Let me try a super kick with my dick.
That's an oldie but a goodie.
Said clitoris.
dick.
Yeah, the narration voice of Edmund Kemper right there.
Yep.
oh. Okay, so did everybody get a chance to say what Muppet they were?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Did you?
I must have really liked that question.
Because for whatever reason, whenever I look at you, I think of Grover.
Oh. Yeah, probably.
Is he the one with the penis nose?
No.
Josh. Oh, no. What? Dick. No, that's... No.
Oh, Squidward. That's the one with the...
My father and fuck me in my fucking nose.
Don't even know the context.
No one does.
Oh, my God.
All right. Yep. Well, enjoy the penis with a friend.
Penis is in your butt.
Recommend it to a friend. All right.
See your dick from at least an arm's length away.
Yeah, COVID is still raging, so be careful. All right. We'll see you next week in another episode. Have a great one.
This is the end. Beautiful friend. This is the end.
has been a presentation of Beer City Media.